I want to tell you about a new investigative podcast called She Has a Name. It's about a young mother who disappeared in Detroit in the summer of 1987. She Has a Name tells the story of loss and redemption, mending broken family ties, and facing the trauma experienced by countless individuals who've lost loved ones to violence. Join host Tanya Mosley and her nephew Antonio as they unravel the secrets of what happened to Anita Wiley. You can search for She Has a Name in your podcast app.
This nation was founded on the principle that all men are created equal.
We hold these truths to be self-evident.
That all men are created equal.
I'll tell you what freedom is to me. No fear. I mean, really, no fear.
It's equal.
Welcome to Created Equal. I'm Stephen Henderson at WDET in Detroit. I've got Cary Jr. II in the studio with me. He is the show's producer. Hey, Cary.
How you doing? How was your weekend?
It was pretty good. A little relaxing, a little busy.
It's getting hot now. The sun is out.
That's right. It's summer. And next week, in fact, one of the initial kind of events of summer is taking place at the Mackinac Policy Conference on Mackinac Island. And the reason I'm thinking about it right now is because we all have to make that drive up to participate in the conference. Mm-hmm. It's about 4.5 hours in the car. And every time I make that drive, I notice something about the state of Michigan that I don't notice when I'm driving around here in Detroit. I notice how much agriculture we have here, how much of the state's land is dedicated to agriculture, mm-hmm. how much of our economy really is driven by agriculture.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I go up north, I try to at least every now and then, and the vast amount of land that I pass by is at some points it's very like serene and tranquil. I enjoy spending time up there, but also I'm out there like wondering, you know, all the folks that are out there doing their jobs, doing working, who get to experience this every single day.
Yes.
What's it like for them?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just to put it in perspective, about 17% of the state's workforce is part of the agricultural industry, which is the second largest industry in Michigan. Wow. It's about 1 million people, and it contributes about $104 billion to the state's economy. So it is not a small piece of what goes on around here. And today we want to talk about some of those folks who do the work to make these farms successful and to make sure that we have food in our local groceries. Increasingly, a lot of them are people from other countries who come here just for the work. They don't necessarily want to be Americans. They don't want to leave their home countries forever. They just know that there are better jobs here than there are where they're from. And there was a recent change to their work that is creating a tension in Western Michigan.
Yeah, people don't really think about migrant workers when they think of Michigan often as much. But just like other states, we too have folks from other countries who work here. And the state of Michigan, too, we have a bill, H-2A bill, which is a visa program that was started almost 40 years ago in 1986 to fill the need for migrant workers, to give them some wages, a required wage, and preserve, but it's still, but preserve some American jobs at the same time. Businesses participating in the H-2A visa program have federally mandated wages and are required to provide housing and transportation. And the U.S. agriculture economy and employment picture has changed a lot since that bill and since that program started. The migrant worker visa program has a lot of issues identified by migrant workers and migrant worker advocacy groups, including the Michigan's Immigrant Rights Center. So another issue that has arisen by this program is that farmers, local farmers, aren't able to keep up with the wage increases. So it's also squeezing them as well, trying to pay these migrant workers those fees. Grant Schraub, who is a reporter at the Detroit News, reported on this, and he's going to be joining us on the show today.
Yeah, we will also have an advocate, somebody who's working in this space, Gonzalo Peralta, who is a staff attorney for Farm Worker and Immigrant Rights Practice at the Michigan Immigrant Rights Center, will be with us as well. We want to talk about the tension between opportunity and profit as it plays out in Michigan's agriculture industry. Great. Grant Schwab and Gonzalo Peralta, welcome to Created Equal. It's great to have both of you here.
Pleasure to be with you.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having us.
So, Grant, I'm going to start with you. You wrote an article recently in the Detroit News that talks about what's changing with the H-2A visa program and how it's affecting Michigan farmers. Tell us about that story.
Yeah. Well, first off, again, thank you for having me. I want to shout out my colleague, Candace Williams, mm-hmm. who I co-wrote the story with. She wasn't able to be here today, but she did tremendous reporting on this story. First, I want to just give sort of a broad overview of the program, which you two already did, but I'll just jump into a little bit more. The H-2A visa program is a temporary worker visa program for farm labor specifically. Mm-hmm. And it's taken off in Michigan and really across the country over the last 10 to 15 years. In Michigan, we have about 15,000 of these workers in the state every year. That was around 500 in 2008. So it's really been a tremendous increase over the last 10, 15 years. But last year, the number of H-2A workers in Michigan fell for the first time in over a decade. It's still around that 15,000 number, but you know, to have a decline for a program that was rising so much is pretty striking.
Mm-hmm.
And the number at the center of recent conversations about this program, something called the adverse effect wage rate. You might see it abbreviated as the AEWR. Whenever you talk about federal programs, you can get in this sort of alphabet soup. But essentially what this AEWR or wage rate is, it's the minimum wage that farms have to pay seasonal farm workers in Michigan, around the country. It's set regionally. And the idea of having this minimum wage, in theory, is that it's meant to stop farmers from offering super low wages to migrants and undercut U.S. workers in the process.
Right.
That wage now is about $18.50 an hour, and it had been rising somewhat steadily over the last 10 to 15 years, until the last 2 years when it's risen by $3.78, which is, you know, if you're operating on tight margins, a pretty significant increase.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk a little bit about who these migrant workers are. I mean, I think for those of us in Southeast Michigan, this is a little bit of an obscure issue. We don't have this kind of workforce here in Detroit and in urban areas. But as you point out, it's something that has become more and more common in agricultural parts of the state. Who are these workers?
So they largely come from Mexico. Mexico is one of the largest contributors of this farm worker population, but they do come from, you know, other places in South America as well, or mm-hmm. South and Central America. And Gonzalo, I perhaps can speak also to sort of the population of who these people are.
Yeah, yeah. Gonzalo Peralta, talk about who these workers are and what it is that they're seeking. I mean, I think when we think about immigration here in the United States, and especially in places like Detroit, we think about people who, of course, want to become Americans. This is a different aspiration.
Correct. And I echo what Grant said. Typically, these are workers from Mexico, individuals who are seeking some economic well-being that is not able to be found in their home country, and then they are able to come here temporarily just for the purposes of working a seasonal job in agriculture. So you're correct that individuals who take advantage of this program, who are visa holders, are coming here just for the purposes of working for a particular amount of time within a particular industry. I can't speak to the underlying desires of someone who may want to migrate here, migrate to the United States, mm-hmm. but the individuals who are taking part in the program are here just for that temporary basis.
Yeah, yeah. So Grant, back to your story, it outlines this tension between the rise in pay for migrant workers and the travails of farmers who are struggling to, you know, keep their farms above water economically in a pretty tough time. Talk about what that tension looks like and how it frames this issue.
I think the tension is sort of like any business. I mean, farms are, you're getting your hands dirty quite literally more than you know, some places like the restaurant industry or hospitality or what have you. But it just gets to this question of margin. If you are not able to make money on the products that you're selling, if it costs you more money to operate than it does to than what you're bringing in, then that's not really a sustainable business in the long term. Mm-hmm. And, you know, farmers will say they're getting squeezed. And I haven't done sort of an extensive survey of farm workers, but some farm workers that Candace spoke to for our story told her that they wouldn't mind seeing the wage that they're paid frozen or capped at a certain amount so that the farms don't disappear that they work at, because they are able to make more money coming to the U.S. to work these seasonal jobs than they would back home in usually Mexico. And even they are saying, hey, it's okay to slow the roll of, mm-hmm. of our wage increases, because if these jobs disappear, then we're in a lot worse shape than if we just took not even necessarily a pay cut, but a pause on annual increases.
Yeah. And of course, the flip side of that is that if you lower the wages or roll back the increases in wages, of course, that affects the prevailing wage for that work, and that affects American workers, right?
It certainly does. But speaking to some folks who are maybe way more expert on this issue than I am, they've told me that a lot of Americans and also farm workers who came to the United States a long time ago, who here, you know, authorized or not, are aging out of agriculture, mm-hmm. or aging out of this sort of business. And when you think about sort of local employment agencies, workforce development efforts, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, especially for, you know, folks who are from the United States and U.S. citizens. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to steer them towards this kind of work, temporary farm work. It might make sense for Mexican seasonal workers, but when you think about long-term career, sustainable living, you know, the aspiration of buying a home someday and having stability in your life, this isn't the kind of job that your local, you know, job agency is going to steer people towards, especially Americans. So just not a lot of Americans are taking these jobs. Yeah. And that is another big part of this conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. And in fact, one of the things that the farms are doing is turning to this H-2A visa to shore up the workforce. Talk about the potential threat, though, to farmers. In your story, it sounds quite dire, and there are farmers who might have to stop growing certain things, they say, if these wage increases continue.
I mean, that's certainly the case, and I'll just go back to that question of margin. If you are, you know, making a dollar on, I don't know, a unit of asparagus that you're selling, you know, let's say it's a 20-pound unit of asparagus, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden that ticks down to a 10-cent loss per unit, you know, maybe you eat that for a couple of years or even a year. But if the long-term outlook is your margin is not just going to be less and less, it's going to turn negative, mm-hmm. then that's just cold hard business. You might have had a farm in your family for generations, but if you are just losing money on it, it might be time to pack up, to sell, to do something different and no longer produce because you're losing money.
Yeah. Yeah. And what about the issue of consumer cost, what we pay, for instance, at the grocery for some of the agricultural products that are grown here? I would imagine that at some point these costs get passed on to us at the register.
They do and they don't. You know, a lot of food in this country and in Michigan is imported from, you know, outside of our borders and in the state, mm-hmm. and outside of the country. And if Michigan farmers are having to compete at the grocery store with lower priced goods from all around the world, mm-hmm. You know, yes, whenever you have increased costs to businesses, you might have a situation where you're passing along costs to consumers, but that's not the whole story here. It's not just this inflationary pressure on things at the grocery store. It's just a matter of competition between businesses. Can Michigan farms compete at the same price of something that's coming from, I don't know, a product coming from Brazil?
Right.
Who could say?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Grant Schwab of the Detroit News. We're going to hear a little more from Gonzalo Peralta from the Michigan Immigrant Rights Center about the issues that surround the H-2A visa program and migrant workers in Western Michigan. In particular, we'd also love for you, the listeners, to give us a call and participate in today's conversation. Tell us what you think about the idea of wages for migrant workers going up or down, what it does to farmers, what it might have, what effect it might have on the availability of food, the cost of food here in our state. What do you think of agriculture and its issues more widely in Detroit? It is the second largest industry in the state of Michigan. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag created equal, or at WDET. We'll be right back with more Created Equal.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
This is Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm glad you're with us. We're talking about migrant workers in Western Michigan who are the subject of a little bit of controversy right now over the H-2A visa program, which allows them to come and work in our country and has been raising wages for those workers, which the farmers who employ those workers say is going to strain their ability to keep their farms going. We've got two great guests. Grant Schwab of the Detroit News is a reporter who covers policy and politics in Washington, D.C. Gonzalo Peralta is a staff attorney for the Farm Worker and Immigrant Rights Practice at the Michigan Immigrant Rights Center. We want to hear from you, the listeners, as well. During this conversation, give us a call. 313-577-1019 is the number. Let us know what you think about migrant workers, their wages, the opportunity that represents, but also the flip side of it, the cost to farmers when they have to pay these wages. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Created Equal or at WDET. Okay, Gonzalo Peralta, I want to talk with you a little more about, I guess, the balance of power that exists in this H-2A system. How much of this is about the government, and how much of this is about the individuals, the workers? How much do they have a say in what happens to them while they're doing this work?
In brief, very little. The workers are very much beholden to the applications that are filed on behalf of the employers themselves. Maybe I'm not understanding the question, but the government is merely trying to adjust, since we're focusing on the AWER, the adverse effect wage, they're just trying to adjust it for inflation. They're trying to deal with the economic realities that we're facing. And the underlying issue of the program is to try to protect and preserve domestic worker wages. Mm-hmm. The idea is the program is not supposed to displace people in the U.S. seeking that work. I find it very curious, the point that Grant made about how there's not a push to try to find domestic workers for seasonal work when the industry is complaining about the increased cost when they could use some of their resources to lobby to try to actually get domestic workers. And then they would be having to pay Michigan minimum wage as opposed to the AWER. Right. So I am a little bit curious about some of the individuals that were spoken to. I don't know many people in many industries that are so willing to take pay cuts. I'm sure that there may be some. I'm not questioning the existence of some farm workers who mm-hmm. are saying that the preservation of their job is more important than an immediate increase in their pay. But I would be hesitant to say that a majority of individuals would not be wanting their wages to increase.
Sure.
Typically, agricultural workers in general are still working for wages that keep them below the poverty guidelines. Yeah. I think there was a study out of the state of Michigan that reported that wages for industries in agriculture are some of the lowest in industries in general in the state. So I understand the economic points made by the farmers. I am just curious about the actual economic realities, particularly when we see so many issues that are plaguing the ag industry in general, mm-hmm. Which is why you have specific protections for these workers, because there's an understanding of how vulnerable they are, of how exploitable they are.
Yeah. So let's talk more about that. The power that employers have over them, and I guess the conditions that that these migrant workers have to endure in order to keep their work.
I think endure is a very apropos word. Yeah. I think you're talking about backbreaking labor. I think you're talking about extremely long hours. You're talking about relying on your employer not only for your economic well-being, but your housing if you're being brought to Michigan in order to work for a place where you're unfamiliar. You are talking about individuals who may take part in the H-2A program and are fearful of raising issues to their employer because they don't want to risk their potential future employment. Mm-hmm. So you have unsafe conditions, you have degraded housing, you have issues of wage theft, people who, employers who are miscounting hours, or individual farms or organizations that pay per weight. And so that calculation may be skewed. So wage theft is a massive issue across multiple industries. And particularly when you come, when you deal with vulnerable populations, like we're dealing with in agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
So it seems like there are these economic counterweights to the proposition that the AWER is suddenly going to bankrupt the agricultural industry in Michigan. So I fail to see the connection between the longevity of agriculture when you see all these other steps being taken by less than scrupulous employers to ensure that they are taking advantage of their workers.
Yeah. This issue also brushes up against the issue of trafficking. Yes. Of course, lots of labor issues do, but this one in particular seems like very vulnerable. The workers here are very vulnerable to people who are involved in trafficking. Can you talk just a little about how we see that play out here?
Sure. No, absolutely. I think you're absolutely right. And I think the crucial idea to take away is what labor trafficking is, because I think people conflate that idea with smuggling.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the same thing as like clandestinely bringing someone across the border. This is about an individual or an employer using certain means to coerce certain labor. So you're talking about people who are being defrauded, who are being lied to about the conditions of the labor, to try to bring them into a condition, to a situation where they're forced to work, sometimes when they're indebted to the employer for being given the job in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that definition, that distinction is not often made and often confused. So when someone thinks, oh, well, this person in Florida was told that they were going to be earning $20 an hour, and they get to Michigan and they're only earning $11 an hour, and they're working 5 hours a day more than they were, and they get no weekends off. that could be a trafficking situation because they were deceived into coming to the to Michigan to work at this location for something that they were promised and then turns out to be false.
Yeah. And their options for recourse, if that happens, aren't very robust, right? I mean, you're here as a visitor. You are someone who's trying to reach economic opportunity. You know, if somebody promises you something and doesn't deliver, what are your options even look like?
Right. I think that hits the nail on the head. There are programs through United States Citizenship and Immigration Services that allow individuals to apply for a benefit, for an immigration benefit, if they are the victim of trafficking, of human trafficking. But there's an immediate concern that if you raise some of these issues, you could be fired, you could be retaliated against. Mm-hmm. And so there is this balance that so many workers have to internally make to determine, is it better for me to lose this opportunity, even though it is exploitative, even though I am in a bad position, if being thrown out is much worse, if I lose my housing as a result. So I think that's where the individual calculus comes in, where someone, there may be remedies, but those remedies are difficult to obtain. You could file a lawsuit. The Trafficking Victims Protection Act allows for individuals to sue their traffickers, but those processes take a long time. These are years of litigation that has to be undertaken. And so the immediate concerns of the people who have been victimized by trafficking have to determine whether they should stick it out in a very bad situation just because they need it for their day-to-day living, compared to the potential prospect of getting some benefit by filing an application with USCIS or by filing a lawsuit.
Yeah, yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Created Equal or at WDET and participate in this conversation about migrant workers and their wages, opportunity versus profit or exploitation. We want to start today with Brian downriver. Brian, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, how are you?
Oh, living the dream.
Go ahead, Brian.
You know, there's so many issues that he hit on that are very close to home for me. I'm in the retail business, and I deal with Michigan farmers all the time. I literally had conversations about H-2A over the weekend with two different farmers, one who's a very large farmer with several hundred H-2A workers, and one that has two. And the larger farmer made the comment to me that with wages as high as they are with H-2A, he may quit farming after three generations.
Hmm. Wow.
And now, again, what goes down to the actual worker versus what costs him, he doesn't look at what he's paying. He looks what it costs him,
right,
or what they're receiving. And he was talking as high as $30 an hour after he pays their transportation to and from the United States, their housing. They're required to take them to a shop, I believe it's once a week, and all that. And I can see, I am certainly would not call myself, I refer to myself as a liberal. So it's not that I think that they don't deserve to be paid. I believe it, but I also see the other side as well.
So Brian, what about the farmer who only had two workers? I wonder if there was a difference in what the reaction was from...
Very much so for him. It wasn't the cost. It was kind of the opposite of what your speaker was saying there, is that they have so many rights and they can refuse to work and all these things that it really, he couldn't conduct business. They were told, not by him, but by the broker who brought them here, that they were going to make, after 40 hours, that they were going to get double and triple time, which, of course, Michigan Agriculture does not pay. Mm-hmm. And so when they worked 45 hours and they got paid for 45 hours, they said, that's it. We're not going to work any more than 40 hours. but the farmer still has to put up the expense of bringing them here, housing them, and everything else that's factored into how they figure that they're going to pay for this labor.
Yeah. Brian, I really appreciate the call and that perspective. I mean, the fact that you talked to two farmers about this and that was their reaction is pretty key. Gonzalo Peralta, I imagine, though, that you have some answers to those criticisms about how much these workers cost their employers, but also how much power the farmers in this instance seem to think that the workers have. I mean, it's kind of the opposite of what you are seeing, I think.
Yeah, I definitely have some concerns about the caller statements. And obviously he's not in the industry. He's just hearing it from
from farmers, sure.
From other farmers itself. I mean, I come from a place where my organization is trying to ensure that workers obtain healthy and safe workplaces. And that includes being paid and compensated for the work being done.
Sure.
I find it slightly disturbing when there's talking about people having too much rights, as if that's a bad thing, mm-hmm. as if the protection of someone's inherent labor and well-being is suddenly has to fall by the wayside when it comes to the economic well-being of the industry itself. My focus is on worker well-being. And I don't believe we should operate within a framework that says that an employer's profits are more important than the likelihood of someone being exploited for their labor.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think it just comes, it's a very, unfortunately for me, it's a very simple calculus.
So I wonder, Gonzalo, if you believe that H2A is perhaps part of the problem, not in the sense that we don't need a work visa program, but that the way it's structured perhaps is not quite the way that that would preserve more of the rights of the workers, but maybe also make things easier for the farmers. Can you talk about the limitations of H2A?
I think you're right. I think the program is not applied in a way that maximizes the well-being of workers. I think it's pretty commonly reported that that there is exploitation happening within the program itself. There is not a massive amount of oversight from the federal government once a labor certification is issued for an employer. I think you have costs associated, human costs associated with the recruitment element that goes into finding people who actually obtain the visas.
Mm-hmm.
There are, again, those trafficking concerns where individuals who become visa holders are told by recruiters that they have to pay back their travel cost, which is unlawful, but it's a reality in the industry. You have all these issues because I think the program itself, although typically an economic boon to the industry to allow a workforce to come in, has these holes that allow exploitation to actually occur. So I think that there's an insufficiency on the part of the government in implementing the program to ensure the well-being of the people who are traveling to do the physical work.
Yeah, yeah. Grant Schwab, I want to bring you back into the conversation here. You cover politics and policy in Washington, D.C. Is there discussion about how we might change H-2A beyond the wage question to make more of a balance between workers and their employers?
Yeah, there has been some executive and then also congressional action or discussion on this. On the executive side, the Biden administration put forth a rule in 2023 that tried to boost the protections for these laborers in the context of protecting their right to hear from advocates on their behalf in their housing, to hear from labor groups to say, hey, these are what your rights are. When Tom Vilsack was in Congress providing testimony, I think it was in February, and he was getting questions about the sustainability on the wage side, he answered a question saying, yes, I'm a representative of farms in this country, but I'm also a representative of farm workers. Mm-hmm. And there are two sides to this equation. So the Biden administration, through what they've said and to some extent through what they've done, they are trying to take care of workers on that side. And then in Congress, while there have been discussions of capping the wage or freezing it over time, to the question of what else is being done to protect these workers, there was in the Farm Workforce Modernization Act, which didn't pass, but has been circulated over the last 2 years, there have been efforts to improve the process for farm workers staying here for a longer period of time. There was the addition of, and I want to get the term correct, of adding a pathway to certified agricultural worker status for H-2A workers, which mm-hmm. would grant legal residency for 5.5 years, while also guaranteeing re-entry to the United States after workers partake in international travel. And that would be, you know, above and beyond what workers currently have. Gonzalo can speak to the legality of this more keenly than I can, but my understanding of the program right now is that workers have to stay or can stay here for up to 3.5 years before they need to leave the U.S. for a period of 3 months before returning. So by having that 5.5 year time window added, that would also be something that is potentially an improvement to the conditions for workers.
Yeah, yeah. Gonzalo, do you want to talk about what Grant's referencing there?
So I know that the Department of Labor, in the issuance of their updated rules, was talking about the prospect of allowing visa holders to transfer their seasonal work between employers, which would allow for some more longevity being in the United States without the need for this travel and retravel. Because I think prior to the issuance of these rules, the visa is tied to an employer. So if the employer's season is over, mm-hmm. the individual is obligated to return to his home country. There's a way to make a transition between employers, but that's a complicated process and not often utilized as far as I understand the program. So this would attempt to ameliorate an element of the flawed H-2A program by allowing workers to remain for a longer and more extended period of time. I'm not sure that it cures everything, but I guess one step at a time.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue talking about migrant workers in Western Michigan and around the country affected by the H-2A visa program. We'll also continue hearing from you, the listeners, on the phones and on social. Give us a call. 313-577-1019 is the number here. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter, hashtag created equal, or at WDET, and we can include you in the conversation that way. Tell us what you make of worker conditions in our agricultural industry, wages, opportunity versus profit or exploitation. We'll be right back with more Created Equal. You're listening to Created Equal from WDET in Detroit. I'm Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've joined us. We've got Grant Schwab with us. He's a reporter for the Detroit News. He covers policy and politics in Washington, D.C. Recently wrote an article about a change in H-2A visa wages. Those are migrant workers who are a large number in Michigan's agricultural industry. Some folks in the industry say that wage hike threatens the viability of their businesses, of their farms. We've also got Gonzalo Peralto with us. He's a staff attorney for the Farm Worker and Immigrant Rights Practice at the Michigan Immigrant Rights Center. We're talking about this issue of not just the H-2A visa, but the idea of agricultural labor more widely, and immigration, of course, more widely. The idea of migrant workers, how they should be cared for, how they should be connected to opportunity when they come to our country, and whether the H-2A program is enough or functioning properly. 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones. That's 313-577-1019. You can call and be a part of the conversation here. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag created equal or at WDET, and we can include you in the conversation that way. Gonzalo Peralta, I want to kind of try to put this in the larger context of the immigration debate that's going on in this country right now, and the policy choices we have, the difficulty we have moving beyond the policies that are in place now. How does that affect some of these issues with migrant workers?
I believe that the primary effect is kind of message conflation. And what I mean by that is, I think people hear the kind of scary terminology around incoming populations, mm-hmm. and then assume the worst based on rhetoric that's being employed. And then you have the H-2A program, which is supposed to just fill an economic need. And I think that there is this confusion that occurs that's so often not corrected, in the sense of like immigrants are coming to take our jobs. And that's just not the reality. That's just not what's happening. And I think it's very crucial that we understand that so much of these negative talking points that are being thrust upon us are mainly scare tactics, mm-hmm. More so than an accurate reflection of what the benefits so many migrant populations bring to this country.
Yeah.
It wasn't long ago in COVID where it was finally recognized that so many migrant workers who work in food industries, in agriculture, are essential workers. They're crucial to allowing our basic well-being. Mm-hmm. But it took a pandemic just to get that that final bit of counter-messaging to be understood. And I just think that we do ourselves a disservice by succumbing to this fear-mongering as opposed to recognizing the benefits and boons that we receive from migrant populations who so often do these jobs that so many other individuals are unwilling to do. And I just think it's very crucial to understanding that these are our neighbors. These are the people that help feed us, that take care of children, that do so many things. And that should be highlighted more so than the rare, tiny story that instills fear in people.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here. Let's go to Paul in Detroit. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Stephen. Now, I want to discuss, actually, so a lot of this is really focusing, as it should, on the workers and their living conditions and all of the rights that they have and deserve. And, you know, it was mentioned earlier that the farmers are getting squeezed. And you know, the pressure from their labor cost was discussed, and then you kind of touched on, you know, what they're able to make at the top end as far as their sales, and the issue, one of the issues that's kind of inherent there is that they can't raise the price to something that would allow them to sustain their business because of our kind of really deeply seated need for inexpensive and cheap food. And that is good for a number of reasons. We need food to be affordable, mm-hmm. but local food systems that are healthy and vibrant and are paying a farmer, a local farmer, for the value of a healthier, fresher, more sustainably grown local product will support a lot of solutions in this system. Mm-hmm. They will... If the farmer can charge what they need to charge, and I know farmers who have tried to hire domestic labor and who have had a lot of trouble with it.
Sure.
And they wanted to, you know, it was an interesting conversation, and it was, I'd love to hire more H-2A visa workers. I can't afford it because they couldn't get the prices they need. And then also they, because this is a smaller farmer, this is more close to that sort of two H-2A visa sort of farm. But they then tried to hire local work, and they could not find it. And this is out in Romeo. This is where, you know, these are you know, people out in there, they couldn't find staff.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so,
Paul, those are really great issues to raise. And they get to something much bigger than the migrant worker question, which is, you know, how we source food, whether we source it locally or import it, and the effect that that has, of course, on workers and worker rights, but also on the viability of local businesses. Grant Schwab, I'll give you a chance to try to address some of what Paul's talking about, I guess, from a national context, this tension between imported agriculture and local, and then I'll go to Gonzalo after you're done.
Sure. I mean, it's a good question. And Stephen, to your point, this is a broader issue of how we source things, not just in agriculture, but let's say fashion as well. I mean, mm-hmm. you talk about fast fashion and cheap goods. A lot of goods, you know, food and otherwise, are produced in other places where people don't have as many rights, and that's why things are able to be as cheap as they are. I think to improve conditions for farmers here or to make the business more sustainable, you need to ask people to kind of, what I'll say is, internalize their externalities. Every time that you're paying a really low cost for something, mm-hmm. there are sort of hidden costs to the world associated with that,
yes.
whether it be pollution or, you know, using labor where people are treated very, very poorly. In order to raise some of those prices, raise some of those costs, and maybe have them from producers in the United States who have fairer conditions for everyone who works, you're going to need to, you know, raise those prices. And it's an issue of asking consumers or asking, let's say, restaurants in this case, to pay more for the food where they're sourcing from, with the added benefit of saying, hey, you're paying more, but you get to know that your purchase is coming from a place that treats its workers well,
right.
or uses sustainable agriculture practices. But that's just a really difficult thing to ask people. I mean, I would love a world where people are willing to internalize that externality and understand the full cost of everything they're buying. But when you are under pressures as a business or just as a person, it can be tough to look beyond that price tag of, well, this is $15 and that's $16. I'm going to go with the $15.
Yeah. Yeah. Gonzalo Peralta, what about this question of where we get our food and who provides it to us?
I think the caller raised, again, like larger systemic issues and I'm not an economist, so I can't talk about those like loftier ideas. But when it comes to the utilization of the H-2A program in order to facilitate the industry, I think this is a point that hasn't been raised yet, but the program, it's voluntary. No farmer is obligated to take part in the H-2A
sure.
program.
Yeah.
So when it comes to making those more equitable decisions such that the consumers can feel better about like a moral choice when they're engaging in consumption, economically speaking, I think you just have to try to allow the industry to seek out options that would comport with that to allow this push for making it seem like this industry is not something that is beneath like domestic workers.
Yeah.
I think that's part of the issue. I think that farm work is very difficult, but I think it's also very noble. And I think that is not highlighted enough such that it draws local employment seekers. And I think the industry would be better by a push to try to actually make use of the potential labor that exists already in the country, such that it may ideally translate into being able to create an affordable product that is also taking into consideration these economic realities, so that the consumer feels better about what exactly they're purchasing and can choose to purchase something locally.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, Grant Schwab and Gonzalo Peralta. It was really great to have both of you here to help explain this issue and talk about all of the things that are swirling around the H-2A visa program. Thanks for joining us on Created Equal.
Thanks for having me. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for raising this issue.
All right, so really, I think, interesting perspectives from both Grant Schwab and Gonzalo Peralta about how much is going on with this migrant worker issue in Western Michigan and all over the country.
Yeah, and how much there is still to do. I mean, there's still a lot we have to deal with in terms of the politics of the situation. And as Peralta indicated before, too, I think we don't often think about these workers and what goes into this type of industry. I mean, we've touched on that a lot throughout this episode. So I'm hoping we get some movement on this and then we understand kind of the full scope of how it's impacting these migrant workers, what they truly want, and what can be done with this H-2A bill. Maybe it does need an update, like you suggested.
Yeah. Important issue and something that we will, of course, be coming back to. It fits into the larger narrative about what we do, about our awful immigration policy, but also how we protect labor in our country.
Yeah, how we support our food systems.
That's right. Okay, that's going to do it for us on Created Equal. Remember, you can listen to recent episodes at WDET.org. We would also love it if you would subscribe to our podcast. Created Equal is produced by Carrie Jr. II and David Lines. The engineering is done by Nate Bender. Audio editing is by Connor Anderson. And the music is by Sam Bobie. And Created Equal is a production of WDET, a listener-supported service of Wayne State University.